Hebrew, that phrase, a certain man, is the identical Hebrew of Daniel 10 verse 5, the man of one. And a certain man found him. And I suggest to you this was actually the only time in Joseph's life where he actually entertained an angel unawares. Because he was on a mission to seek his brethren, he was guided and directed in the path that God would have him to go. Because this individual that he came across not only had been listening to his brothers, you can hardly imagine they would be telling everybody where they were going. He says, I heard them, in verse 17, I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So you see, here was a person who guided him to find his brothers. And this is God's angelic promise to Jacob and his seed that is now not failing. I will never leave thee. And as all angels often do, they ask a question. He says, what are you looking for? When he said, I seek my brethren, he says, I heard them. And he directed him to go in the correct way. I want you to notice, though, in verse 16, the dramatic confession of Joseph. An angelic question often brings out the motivations. Where is thy brother Cain? What are you doing here, Elijah? Have you considered my servant Job? And you see, angelic questioning often brings out the motivations of one's heart. And we have it here again. And here's the confession of Joseph. What are you looking for, Joseph? I'm looking for my brethren. I'm seeking my brethren. And that was the story of his life. We read in verse 17, he went after his brethren. He never gave up on seeking his brethren. And God will bless that lovely spirit, brethren and sisters. He will direct our path. If our motivation is that we might find our brethren, to bring them back to the house of Jacob in the fullest sense, then God will bless that spirit. He didn't know that his mission to find his brethren was going to take 20 years before he could make them true men, but his spirit was blessed by God because he wanted to find his brethren. Well, he found them in Dothan. He was greatly relieved to find his brethren were still okay, but he soon found that he was met with bitter violence and antagonism. And they took him, and they cast him into that pit. And for the first of two times in the life of Joseph, his coat was in the hand of his enemies and was used against him. He would have been put to death had not Reuben for once shown a bit of courage and a bit of leadership to save him from the murderous intent of his brothers. And in verse 20 they said, when they cast him into the pit, they said, we will see what shall become of his dreams. And those words were to haunt them for the rest of their lives. We will see. They did see what became of his dreams in a most dramatic way. And then we read in verse 25, they sat down to eat bread. Now there's something terribly callous about the brothers of Joseph. What a graphic scene this was. How could they be so callous as to sit there on the top of that pit and none of them to rescue Joseph? None of them to even reassure him what's going to happen to him. They sat around and they sat there eating their dinner while Joseph screamed from the bottom of the pit. When you come to Genesis 42 and verse 21, when they were under pressure in Egypt, here's what they said. Now this is interesting because this indicates the problem of group pressure. You see, not one of them had lifted a hand to rescue Joseph from that pit. Not one of them protested that perhaps that this was all wrong. In Genesis 42 and 21, when they were put under pressure, they said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. And for years after, the screams of Joseph echoed through their brains, and yet not one of them had moved a finger to help him. And when they got put on the spotlight later on, they said, we know, it's still haunting us to listen to what he cried from the bottom of that pit. But you see, group pressure is a terrible thing. Later on, they went home with the torn coat, and they stood around Jacob with sad faces, and they watched Jacob fall apart. No one spoke, and a terrible conspiracy was upheld for year after year of heartless silence. It's a terrible thing, is group pressure to protect evil. It only required one of them to just utter one word that would have saved Jacob from his distress, that would have perhaps had time to go and bring Joseph back from captivity and from slavery. But they didn't, brethren and sisters. They watched Jacob cry night after night. Look what it says in verse 35, and all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted. He said, I will go down to the grave unto my son mourning. And thus his father wept for him. And his sons were there, it tells us. They were standing around him, and they watched him cry himself to sleep every night for Joseph. And nobody said a word. And God's telling us that that's the great evil of peer group pressure to protect the guilty. You see, that's the chains of cover-up, isn't it? The chains of sin and deceit and lies are extremely strong. And having committed one crime, you've got to commit further crimes of hypocrisy to cover them up. David found that lesson, didn't he? That adultery led to murder, and murder led to hypocrisy, and that led on to bad judgment. And you see, sin is like that, brethren and sisters. It leads to a chain which we cannot break away from. And I can imagine as the years went by that they felt guilty concerning their brother. And some of them would have perhaps liked to have gone to Jacob and said, look, Dad, he's not really dead. But nobody could afford to do that because of the pressure of the others. And what a contrast between Joseph, who went to his father and told his father about his brethren, that he might help his brothers, and the rest of them who held that guilty secret in their hearts for 20 years. An incredibly sad thing, brethren and sisters, was this problem of group sin. We know how much it ached them out, because later on we find that Judah, when he's put in front of Joseph in chapter 44 and verse 34, says, I could not bear to see the evil that come on my father. Look what it says in Genesis 44 and verse 32. For thy servant, this is Judah speaking, became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, if I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. Now this is a man that was prepared to stand there and to see his father fall apart with grief. And he says in verse 44, or verse 33, now therefore I pray thee, let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brethren. I'm prepared to sacrifice my life to slavery, says Judah, because I could not ever dare to go back and see the evil upon my father. How shall I go up to my father, and the lad be not with me, lest peradventure I see the evil that will come upon my father? And you can see what a guilty conscience has done for Judah. It's eaten him out, and he could never ever face the prospect of going back to Jacob without Benjamin, because he knew what he would see happen again. And yet nobody had said anything for all those years. We need to learn, brethren and sisters, what a terrible force is group consensus to bury the conscience. But unbeknownst to the brothers of Joseph, God was getting to work on their problems. Joseph was sent down to Egypt. God sent a man before them into Egypt, not only to prepare the way to preserve the seed of Jacob, but he sent a man before them that their repentance might be accomplished. But I want you to think about Joseph. He's 17 years of age. He's lonely. He's very likely suffering from the cold. He's afraid. He's extremely sad about his brethren. And he must have been questioning his God. You know, Brother Roberts has a very beautiful summary about Joseph at this particular stage. He says, Joseph was innocent and excellent, but Joseph was young and untried, and God had a great purpose for him that required that he should be matured and perfected in character, as men only can be perfected in the school of adversity. Joseph had to be fitted for exaltation and the exercise of power, and therefore Joseph had to suffer for Joseph's own sake. and for the bringing about of a great result to the whole house of Israel. Brethren and sisters, let us never begrudge the differing circumstances that God puts us in our lives. Joseph had to grapple to understand what it was that was being accomplished in him. And it was the struggles and the temptations of life that now came upon him that fitted Joseph to rule. Again, Brother Robert, Joseph was allowed to become the object of his brethren's successful hatred. Therefore, as sympathy sheds a tear, the understanding admires why Joseph is bound by unfeeling brethren, and in spite of his frantic entreaties, is lowered into a pit where death appears inevitable. No greater evil short of death could befall a human being than that which has thus come to Joseph. A spectator on the spot would have said there was no possible good that could come out of it. There was no explanation given to Joseph. He was not permitted to know the meaning. He could not have understood it if told. Let us recollect this when in any similar situation. Let us never resent the fact that perhaps God has placed us in difficult or dysfunctional family situations. Let us learn from Joseph to take personal responsibility, to get out of our minds the blame culture that says, well, I'm just a product of my environment, which is I'm not responsible for the things that I do. God will hold every one of us individually responsible for our own burden in life. Let's develop in our children a very clear principle of what is right and what is wrong, and encourage them when they see things that are wrong, that the best and the most loving thing that you can do for those who are doing things that are wrong is not to cover up for them, but to speak up and to get some help. Joseph was only 17 when he was left alone to face the trials and the pressures of Egypt. It was because of the fantastic education given to him by Jacob in what the principles of Abraham's life were that he was unable to survive incredible temptations that came his way. We have to send our children out into the world often at the age of 17, either to work or to college or other places like that. Joseph is an outstanding example of the benefit of early years that have been well used by faithful parents. Let's encourage our children to be masters of dreams. Let's encourage them to keep speaking the word, even if others do not want to hear it. And let us, like Joseph, seek our brethren. Never become embittered because what others might have done. Never become callous or uncaring. But always seek our brethren that we might obtain their ultimate good. Brethren and sisters, Joseph is a prime example of how to cope in a dysfunctional family. Let us educate our children to do likewise.